This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, wherever you are in the world today, I welcome you with a grateful heart to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at Empower Radio. You know, that's not canned. That is completely 100% true. I do welcome you, and I'm so excited to be here. I'm really excited about my guest today, Kim Schneiderman. You know, my husband and I have 5 adult children, and throughout their lives, especially to 2 of them, I have said, it's just a story. You can rewrite it at any time you want. Trust me, at 50-something years old, I have rewritten my story numerous times, and I'm super excited about hearing about Kim's work and how we can all step out of our story, which coincidentally is the title of her book, and create a new life for ourselves, whatever we want that to be. So I'm going to stop talking and I'm going to say, welcome, Kim. I'm excited that you're here today.
Thank you. I'm also really, really honored.
I really have forever been telling my kids, it's just a story. And when I read on the opening page of your website, I read your first paragraph, I thought, I love this woman. I just love this woman. I want her to be part of my show. So, and in the first sentence, every life is an unfolding story, a dynamic, unique, purposeful, and potentially heroic story with bright spots, turning points, and abounding opportunities for personal growth and transformation. You never say you're going to hit rock bottom. You're going to have it. You call it a bright spot or a turning point, and that was wonderful. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
You are welcome. And tell me, what does it mean to step out of your story? And how do we do that?
Well, it means to look at your life so that you really sort of value the inherent opportunities for personal growth that are presented to you. In every moment of your life, and in all the plot lines of your story. So it really means being able to become sort of a really good reader of the subtext of your own life, so that you can mine the redemptive silver lining narrative in almost any situation you face.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And I love that you called it plot lines.
Yeah. Well, my book is about really looking at yourself as a character in your story and being able to see how, like, in all of the books and films that we really appreciate, there's usually very good character development, and we kind of expect that that's going to happen. We sort of expect that the hero is going to experience something that's going to push them to stretch in some way, right? Mm. And how the hero responds to these calls or these challenges really determines how he or she grows for better or for worse.
So, well, and something that you said there, I want to just interject for a second. Something that you said earlier was to read better. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you mean by that?
Okay. Well, right. So it means that we all really, there's many, many different ways. There are infinite ways to tell the story. To tell a story. And mm-hmm. if you can imagine the way that you would tell your story to the way that you would tell your story to your best friend would be very different than you might tell it to an acquaintance, might be very different than you might tell it to the antagonist of your narrative.
Yeah, or your parents.
Right. And so the most important person that we need to really be concerned about when we tell our story is how we tell it to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that means being able to use the power of interpretation to be able to read the situations that show up in our lives as personal growth opportunities, as opportunities to transform our character. So, and how you do that is, in my book, I offer 2 techniques. One is by writing in the third person, mm-hmm. which enables you, it gives you kind of an emotional distance to step out of your story so that you can look at it from a broader perspective. And that kind of, it's kind of a technique for sort of trickering the censoring ego into thinking that you're writing about somebody else's story when really you're kind of, wink, wink, writing about yourself.
Right.
And the other technique I offer is what I call the story lens on life, which mm-hmm. is kind of using the elements of the story that people learned in grammar school, you know, how there's a protagonist, there's an antagonist, there's, you know, a conflict that forces the, you know, that is created by the tension between the protagonist and the antagonist that moves the story forward and then ultimately comes to a resolution. By looking at all of the elements of the story as an architecture of the story and using that as sort of a filing system to understand how each of these elements are sort of supporting, could be potentially be conspiring to help the character of the story grow in a, as a way to kind of reconstruct a powerful, coherent narrative from the raw materials of our lives.
Well, can you give an example of a situation that you might be alluding to for that?
Well, sure. I can speak from my own experience, which is that 3 years ago I lost my father, and
I'm sorry.
Thank you. And as I write in my book, you know, it was the third loss from cancer in like the last 10 years. And, you know, I had had a very challenging relationship with my dad growing up and kind of had made my mother my confidant. And when she developed cancer when I was 25 and she died like 11 years later, it was really devastating, but it gave me an opportunity to get closer to my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got closer, but then he got sick, and mm-hmm. I had an opportunity to take care of him at the last days of his life. And it was, even though it was very, very sad and very, very hard on so many levels, it was also an incredibly transformational experience for me. Because we just grew to really understand and love each other so much more deeply.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many ways that I can tell that story. And I have told it many times. But I can tell it, I could tell it one way, and that it would sound like a tragedy, and people would feel very sad about it. And it is sad. However, people often get stuck in their stories. They get stuck in their sadness, and they get stuck in feeling that, in that sort of victim mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And by telling it a story as sort of like the prodigal daughter, of this story of an opportunity to transform and heal a relationship, I feel better about it, obviously, and that creates good energy and helps me sort of, and I think that, you know, if you believe in the law of attraction, that by telling your story in that, by telling my story that way, it's a way for, it kind of allows me, as I say in my book, how you tell your story affects how you feel about your story, and how you feel about your story affects how it unfolds.
Well, and it affects how your everyday existence is going to be. I do believe in the law of attraction. I believe in the law of attraction and the law of action. You know, I'm very mm-hmm. famous for saying what we focus on multiplies, good, mm-hmm. bad, or indifferent. That's what you're going to get in life. And putting that positive spin on your story, in my opinion, and how I live, is really focusing on the highest good, on a more mm-hmm. loving existence,
mm-hmm.
not just for the way I'm telling my story, but for life in general. You know,
absolutely.
And it's going to make me feel better. And really, that's what we're all about. We're here to feel better, not worse.
Right. And that doesn't mean necessarily that you need to gloss over the harder parts of your story.
Right.
You know, I am taking actually...
Because they're real.
But they're real. Absolutely. But I know, you know, I'm taking a certificate in... finishing a certificate in social work and spiritual care. And one of the things we talk about is this concept of spiritual bypass, where people kind of use spirituality as a way of, you know... avoiding some of the more unpleasant feelings and experiences that happen in life.
And right. So when you passing look at up heartbreak and disappointment and yeah. anger and really not facing it, dealing with it, I guess.
Absolutely. And all those parts of our story, they're important parts of our story. Mm-hmm. And they don't need to be excluded. It's about reframing them and looking at, you know, how they help us grow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the more that we can incorporate all of that into our story, the fuller our story becomes, and the more developed our character becomes, and the more that we are developed as a character, the more that we can hold in our life. So, and we kind of understand this when we're reading a book or we're watching a film. We get that the character is being put in a situation, and they're going to mm-hmm. come out in another way. We really understand that in a really deep, and we look forward to it. We root for it. It's hard when we're in our own stories because, you know, when we're stuck in something that's more challenging, for example, and it doesn't even have to be a negative thing. It could be like you're preparing for the Olympics, and it's scary, and you've got a lot to do, or whatever it is that you're doing. You're preparing for, you know, but it can be hard to look at our lives objectively because we're so, you know, it's an emotionally charged situation, and we're feeling those feelings, and you know, it's so by being able to kind of step back and look at it and say, well, you know, whatever happens in this story, because there's not, we can't always, I really believe that we co-author our stories. Whatever happens in this story, you know, we are going to be able to, we're going to grow from it. We're going to be able to come out, we're going to learn something that we don't already know. Because obviously in every story we know that the character has a particular arc, that they start out having a certain set of beliefs or expectations about reality, they go through something, you know, and then they come out on the other side and they've learned something they didn't know before. So if we can look at that, and you know, I think people understand, you know, whenever I remind my clients, for example, because I'm a therapist, that, you know, this is an important growth opportunity, they're like, yeah, yeah, another, you know, bloody for personal
cliche.
But it really does. But these things really do deepen who we are as people. If we look at them that way. And mm-hmm. that's, again, going back to your what I'm talking about, using the power of interpretation. Because when we read, like I was an English major, and we would learn, you know, when you learn how to interpret, there's many different ways to interpret what you're reading.
Absolutely.
So imagining your life as a text, you know, imagining that your life is a text and you have the power to interpret it in a way that is negative and can make you feel, you know, bad because things happen in life inevitably to everybody. Or you can look at it and say, you know, how am I going to look at this as a way to deepen and enrich myself even when I can't control how my plot line is unfolding?
I love that. One of the things that I really love is that it so closely resembles my philosophies of this isn't happening for me. I mean, to me, this is happening for me. You know, like, okay, so what is happening in here for me that I can grow from? You know, and, mm-hmm. and it might seem to be a yucky situation and it might feel that way. Not that I'm denying feeling it. However, what can I do a little bit differently to look at it as a growth opportunity? Do you think putting a positive spin on it, on the story of your life, makes it any less truthful or truthful sounding at any rate for yourself or to the interpreter?
Well, first of all, you know, we spin our stories all the time. You know, every time we open our mouths, we make choices about how we're going to, you know, tell a tale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on your audience, you might emphasize certain aspects of the story over others or omit certain details that seem irrelevant or too complicated to explain. So is one version more truthful than another? You know, who's to say? You know, mm-hmm. and how does one define truth? It's really, you know, the objective... I like to distinguish between the objective experiences of things that happen, what I call the outer story, you know, and the inner story, which is how we, the more subjective, which is how we experience them. Is, you know, one, is the objective more truthful than the objective? You know, I don't think it's necessarily, I actually don't even think it's so much, that's so much an important question. Because I guess I'm less concerned with what's really true is what's most meaningful when it comes to understanding the totality of a person's experience. You know, so for me, it's less important whether a story is truthful than whether it's personally constructive. And if you reframe your story as a personal growth adventure that identifies the way you've grown as the protagonist of your narrative, there's really room for all manner of feelings and experiences which imbue the story with richness and texture. And the fuller the story, the more it approximates something resembling truth. But I don't think that you can ever put a capital T on any version of a story, you know, because there's just so many ways to look at it.
Well, and it reminds me of, you know, sitting in a room with my mom and my sister, and we, one of us will tell a story about something that happened, and the other will say, well, I don't remember it like that. And and the other one will relay it how they remember it. And then the other one will say, that's not what happened at all. Mm-hmm. And it's really goes back to our interpretation and our perception of the events that took place, whatever they might be.
Right.
Yeah, so listeners, I am talking with Kim Schneiderman. Kim is a psychotherapist, right, Kim?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she has a fabulous piece of work out called Step Out of Your Story, Writing Exercises to Reframe and Transform Your Life. You can find all of Kim's information on the Empower Radio website at Soulful Living. She does so many different things and heads writing workshops, so you'll want to visit her events page and check in on that. And in the meantime, grab her book, because those exercises will help you tremendously. You know, I read the first, like your intro, and you started by the very first paragraph about talking about how you used to read stories, Nancy Drew stories and all of
right.
that. And
right.
I did that too. You know, when I was a little girl, I read at least 3 books a week. There were times when I read a book a day, especially in the summer. And I would imagine that I was the main character in every story, and I'm sure that's how I've become such a good storyteller myself.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
But, you know, is there research really that supports telling that story in the third person, and do the exercises that you offer in there, are they really effective in helping people change their story of their lives?
Well, I certainly hope so. but to answer your question, yes, there's a lot of research out there. I actually have a research sidebar in the second chapter of my story that lists all the studies that have shown that looking at your life from a third person perspective can help you view your life with more compassion and through gentler eyes. I'm just looking through my notes here because I haven't memorized these studies. But actually, I will be, I found it. But there was a cover story in the Psychology Today, like the June issue, that talked about how our inner voice, and actually that they've done studies that show that it's not that how we talk to each other from the perspective that we talk to each other makes a huge, you know, the perspective that we talk to ourselves, sorry, makes a huge difference. And they were also citing the same third-person studies that I cite in my book,
Awesome. And I'm a big believer in that, you know, that how you talk to yourself, first and foremost, is how you're going to show up in life.
Absolutely. I mean, and the whole idea behind, like, the third-person perspective is that it creates, again, emotional distance. You know, it's sort of, we all have a censoring ego. And whenever we use the first person I, like, that ego is, like, on alert. You know what I mean? Like, we become so attached to what's attached to what, is attached to our I. So when we use the third person, it really is, it's a sneaky perspective, because it allows us to, what I describe is sort of to tap into the omniscient narrator that we all have inside mm-hmm. of ourselves. And the omniscient narrator has the incredible ability to sort of mind. We all have different voices inside ourselves, and they come from different places, a lot of times by our conditioning and such. So what, and the omniscient narrator, which would be the equivalent of, like, whoever, if you're reading The Great Gatsby, or is it, I can't remember if Great Gatsby is in first or third person. So if you're reading a book and there's somebody that's not a character telling the story, that's the omniscient narrator.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the equivalent of our observing ego, our observing mind, our observing mind, our higher self, the voice of our higher self. People call it many different things. I'm calling it the omniscient narrator that has sort of the ability to mine all of these competing voices for our most authentic voice, our elevated perspective. So by using the third person, you're tapping into that. And it really, I've been doing these workshops. I started, the book was a workshop before it was a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done the workshops at, 92nd Street Y and the JCC in Manhattan. And people really have told me that they are amazed at how much freer they feel when they, use the third person perspective, that it allows them to tap into another part of themselves. I mean, and sometimes they give me funny looks when I say, this is what we're going to be doing. And then I use other, I use a lot of also dialogues.
Mm-hmm.
Having people, one of the things I do is have people sort of identify the antagonist of their story and then look at what that antagonist, I talk about character traits and character strengths a lot. So looking at what vulnerabilities the antagonist in our story is exposing, because obviously when we have a challenging person in our life, for example, it exposes things that we don't feel so strong about. So I talk about looking at your antagonist as the personal trainer who's there to help you develop the emotional muscles that you need to move forward so that you can move ahead to the next chapter.
Boy, I just got a visual of that. I mean, I could literally see that personal trainer experience jumping in and really helping to motivate me forward. So what would be an example, a brief example, of an exercise that you might have a student do, or that's included in the book, I should say, that we can look forward to?
Sure. I'll give you three quick examples.
Okay, yeah, but we have 3 minutes, so that'll be perfect.
Okay.
One for each minute. Let's do it, girl.
One is I ask people to imagine your life as a story, and what is the title of the current chapter, and describe it in the third person. That's how I have people start. Then they isolate the antagonist of their story, and they look at the vulnerabilities it's exposing and the character traits that it's helping them develop, and then I have them dialogue, write a play, a script, between an anthropomorphized character trait. You would dialogue with courage. Courage, how can I have more of you in this situation? And then courage would talk back. Well, first you need, I'm inside of you, I'm deep down. You just need to access me. And then I would write, so you would dialogue with courage. And you also dialogue with your vulnerabilities, too. And then at the climax exercise, and in addition to imagining an ideal climax, I have people, because sometimes, in the climax of the story, the antagonist sort of slays their inner dragons, and if they can, and it's great if you can make peace with your antagonist, but even if you can't control that situation, like people who are going through a divorce, for example, may not be able to make peace with their soon-to-be ex-spouse.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can give yourself the blessing that you seek from the other person, that can be very transformative. So I have an exercise where I ask people to give themselves, because you can't ask for a blessing unless you know you deserve it. So I ask people to give it to themselves. So
and realize that they do deserve it. That's amazing. That's got to be really powerful.
Yeah, so those are three examples, really, really, you know, encapsulated.
Well, you did a great job of getting those in, and oh my God, the information that you have shared is so powerful. I cannot wait to really delve into the book, because I obviously just got it and have just been looking at snippets of it. And, you know, as a shamanic practitioner, I can see that in a shamanic journey, I'm going to use those little snippets, even like talking to Courage. When I'm feeling disconnected with some experience in my life. So I cannot thank you enough for being here today, Kim.
Oh, you're welcome. It was really a pleasure.
Well, and one more thing before we go. You got a minute. I love for my guests to leave the listeners with one thought that they can take out into their life to change it, to elevate their soul. What would that thought be for you?
I guess the thought would be that they have the power to look at their life as a personal growth adventure, and really they have the power to reclaim and transform their narrative by choosing to focus on the things in their life that are helping them grow and deepen into. Just a more expansive human being.
Thank you. Thank you for being here at Soulful Living.
Thank you for having me.